Let's start with a hard truth wrapped in a soft blanket. Yep, food addiction is real. And if you're struggling with it, you're not broken, lazy, or weak. You're human. You're living in a world where the food industry spends billions engineering snacks to hijack your brain, and your biology is just doing its thing, trying to survive. Today, we'll cover all the research and the why of food addiction, and then I'll give you my 5 actionable steps to start healing your food addiction today. So stay tuned.
I'm Dr. Abby Metcalf, and I'm a practicing psychologist, number one Amazon best-selling author, TEDx speaker, and all-around relationship maven with over 35 years of experience helping people just like you. Join me as I teach you actionable tips and strategies to create connection, joy, and ease in all your relationships. So let's get to it.
Welcome back to the podcast. You know I love talking about food. You know I love thinking about food. You know I love eating food. If you've been with me for any amount of time, my previous assistant called me a food pervert because I'm always like, what are you eating? What is it? Is it good? Can I have some? I do. I love food. And I just did an episode on emotional eating. So if you haven't listened to that yet, definitely go back. We'll talk about it, emotional eating, a little bit today. I just did it a few weeks ago, so it'll be here or wherever you're listening. And someone under that, I had asked in that episode, I said, hey, is anybody interested in hearing about food addiction as opposed to emotional eating? And quite a few of you said yes. So here I am. I've jumped the line with this, so it's a little closer to the food, to that emotional eating episode. So hopefully, you know, by the time a lot of people listen, they could listen to them together maybe. So we're going to jump right in to what is food addiction? Like, what are we talking about? And let me say this first. Food addiction is not, I repeat, is not officially listed as a diagnosis in this big book I always talk about that we psychologists and healthcare professionals use called the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders. It ain't in there. But I will also tell you, it's also called the DSM-5. We're at TR now, text revision or something. I will also tell you that the DSM is woefully behind all the time. It's, you know, part of a bureaucracy. Yeah, I'm calling you out, DSM. I'm calling you out. It has often been behind in things. Homosexuality was in there till edition 3. Someone can comment if I'm wrong, but I know it was in the 3rd edition. I think it was gone by 4, but you know, there's a lot of stuff that's been wrong in there or just so behind the times. So, and I think food addiction, I think it's a big overlook. I think it should have been in there a long time ago. And as someone, as you know, I am in recovery from my heroin addiction. And so food has, you know, been something I've thought about a lot, talked about a lot. And I've seen with my clients how commonly someone will switch between addictions. So someone maybe who has a problem, I've seen this so many times, someone who's alcoholic ends up getting bariatric surgery later because they blow up, or vice versa. They take care of the food addiction, you know, maybe with bariatric surgery or something, and then end up with alcoholism. I mean, the way that these things overlap is unbelievable. So we're going to really get into it today, but I want to be clear that the concept of food addiction is widely accepted and studied. I just always bring you know me. I always bring you what is. So I don't want you saying it's a diagnosis when it's not yet. I think it will be, but it's not this minute. There is a growing body of research which shows that certainly that highly processed foods, especially those high in sugar, fat, salt, they, you know, light up the brain's reward system, just like drugs of abuse do. It's unbelievable how the pathways are similar. And I am going to do some science today, but I'm not going to go deep because I want to get into the action steps for what to do. I'm going to cover, though, how is it different than emotional eating? You know, I'm going to give you what you need as I always do, but I could spend a long time talking about why foods are addictive and how and what they do and the industry. And I trust me, this episode was about could have been 5 hours. Okay. I had to really sit and think over and over. I had to keep kind of culling, like, you know, how do I stay in my lane as a psychologist? How do I stay in my lane of how to help you the best and not just have, you know, a course on food and what happens, but we're going to cover the high points for sure. So definitely we're going to cover, right, the release of dopamine, you know, that neurotransmitter that, you know, lets you know, hey, that felt good. Let's do it again. And for some people, that feedback loop can spiral into compulsive eating behaviors that look and feel a lot like drug addiction. So, and researchers often use, there's something called the Yale Food Addiction Scale, YFAS. That is generally what's used to identify symptoms of addiction-like behavior related to food. So, and I'll link to all this. I'll link to all the research. I'll link to that. I'll link to everything in the show notes, as I always do, which is really, if you go to my website, the podcast page, you'll see the show notes for this episode. You can go to the Relationship Tips and Tools page. There's a fully written blog there. If you want to forward this information to somebody who doesn't like listening to an episode, and or if you want to come back for notes later, like I've written them all out for you, and everything's linked. And if you're watching me on YouTube, everything is linked below the video. So you know, I'm never saying anything that isn't backed up, and you can go look that up yourself, which I highly recommend. You know me, I love to research. So it's one of my favorite things. When I'm listening to a podcast, I'm like, where did they hear that and how and what's that? And I go look and I have myself a time, which is probably why whenever I'm reading a book or listening to a podcast, it takes me like 10 times as long as someone else because I am going down rabbit holes of research. But anyway, or you can just take my word for it and go from there, but whatever you like. So addiction-like behavior related to food are things like when you eat more than you intended. You know, maybe you said, oh, I'm going out for lunch later, but I'm meeting my friend right now. So I'm just going to have like a little snack, you know, and then you end up eating like a full meal then and at lunch, you know, that kind of thing. Or, you know, yeah. Or just saying, I'm going to eat this bowl of cereal and not have any more. And you have three more bowls or whatever, you know, it's in some way that you kind of said how much you were going to eat or felt like, oh, one plate of this is enough or whatever. And then you ended up eating more. And you do that more than once. Obviously, everybody, don't tell me like, oh, Thanksgiving, I ate a lot. Well, yeah, okay. Or that you went to some Michelin-starred restaurant and overate, you know, okay, that happens. But I mean in a typical way. It happens repeatedly. It's even a daily thing or every week or something like that. There also, if there's repeated unsuccessful attempts to cut down. So anyone who's ever been on a diet, period. Anyone who has ever said, I'm never eating whatever again and ate it again. Anyone, right? Anything like that. Continued use despite negative consequences. By the way, so these are all things we have in the DSM for alcohol or drug addiction, right? Or substance use disorder or alcohol use disorder. It's all the same stuff, just so you know. Repeated attempts to cut down, you know, how much alcohol you're drinking, drinking more than you intended to drink when you went out, right? These are all the same things. Continued use despite negative consequences. You had a DUI, your wife said she would leave you if you kept drinking and you kept drinking, right? Same thing. Same thing happens with food though. So, you know, negative consequences of food are things like obviously gaining weight, but also maybe you throw up after you eat too much and that's a negative consequence. Maybe you just feel like crap afterwards and you beat yourself up. Maybe you have diabetes or something else that's really affected or some other, you know, you've had a heart attack and you're not supposed to have steak anymore or something, you know, and you keep eating it, right? So continue to use despite negative consequences. Cravings so intense, they interfere with your daily life. So this would be that, again, sometimes people who drink, let's say, would get a craving, like literally they would leave work early to go to a bar, or they would decide to eat lunch out every day so they could have a drink out at lunch. They would, you know, it's interfering with your daily life. It doesn't mean that your life gets ruined every day because of it. It means that somehow you make accommodations for this thing every day. Do you see what I'm saying? It's interfering with the daily way you do life. So yeah, someone asks you, And it could be, again, that you stay out, you know, you're somehow eating instead of doing other things that you're supposed to be doing. That's interfering with your daily life. Does that make sense? Okay. So, you know, you might be eating a pint of ice cream after a long day, even though you're not hungry, even though you've promised yourself you wouldn't. And maybe you feel physically uncomfortable or just emotionally distressed after. So again, that's not just emotional eating. We're getting into the territory of food addiction. Okay. So before I jump into much there, I want to talk about what makes food so addictive. And this is where I cut this way down, people. Okay. You're not going to be with me an hour here. I want to say a couple things about it and then we'll get into the rest. So, and this is the sneaky part, you know, you don't get addicted to kale, right? You don't get addicted to broccoli. You get addicted to what are called hyperpalatable foods. And these are foods that are scientifically engineered. They are scientifically engineered combinations of fat, sugar, and salt. And they're designed to keep you coming back for more. They're also designed in their texture and how they melt in your mouth. These are called highly palatable. One of my favorite little junk foods are Cheetos. Not Fritos, Cheetos, like the big puffy cheesy things. I like the white cheddar ones myself. And those I know are known as one of the most palatable foods there are because of the way they literally melt in your mouth when you eat them and cause you to eat more. And I am someone who's usually pretty good about, not just pretty good, I'm very good actually at not overeating. It's one of my, of all my problems, I have many. When I'm done, I'm done. Like I don't eat past even towards full. Like it's just, I will eat all day long. Don't get me wrong, but I won't eat, past full. I've been that way since I was a little kid. I order a lot of food and then I don't eat a lot of food. I've been that way since I've been little. So I'm addicted. You know, I love my food. I don't know if I'm addicted, but you know what I mean? I'm obsessed with food. I love food. I want to taste everything. I want to have one bite of everything that you have at the table, but I really will just eat the one bite. I will leave food. When I eat those Cheetos, that is one of the times that I actually have to take a serving out of the bag. I've got to put it in a bowl because I will suddenly realize I don't feel good. So there are, that is a very that food was made for what happens to me when I eat it. So I usually don't keep those in the house. I have to admit, because it's not one of the things I can say no to easily. Like I just love them. And now I'm wanting them right now. Hello. Now I want them. See, now I'm starting to get obsessed with thinking about them and how crunchy and delicious they are. But anyway, now you are too. You're like, shut up, Abby. Now I want to go eat those. Or you're listening from Australia going, we don't even have those. Do you have those in Australia? Comment under the video. I want to know. But you know, you have a food. So they're designed to keep you coming back for more. Again, like chips, pizza, cookies, soda, ice cream, fast food. These are foods that create a dopamine high that your brain wants to chase. And over time, just like with drugs or alcohol, your brain needs more to feel the same hit. So the cravings get louder and your ability to stop gets weaker. And these foods are always also lower in fiber and lower in protein, meaning they don't satisfy your hunger or help regulate your blood sugar. So you can eat and eat and still feel, you know, what I call snacky an hour later. And that is by design of these foods. Okay. It is by design. So one major theory explaining this is what's called the incentive sensitization theory. So the more your brain associates pleasure with these foods, the more you want them, even if you don't actually like them anymore. It's that weird moment when you're, you know, eating a donut you're not enjoying, but can't seem to stop. Yeah, that's what that is. Okay. So again, I could go into all this for hours and I'm not going to, but I linked all the research and I do want to say this. So your free thing today, if you want it, is a 5-day dopamine reset challenge. Now, I just did a episode on dopamine detoxing. That's kind of a scam, but you should do it anyway. That would have come out a few weeks, maybe, I think, before this episode. If you haven't listened to that yet, I highly, highly recommend that you do. But I'm offering, and so if you have listened to that, you might want this for that or this episode. a 5-day dopamine reset challenge. You can download that below the video again in all the places I said where the research is and where you can read. You can download that there. I will tell you, because I'm always transparent, if you download anything from me, any free thing I'm giving you, it puts you on my love letter list, which is just that. Twice a month, you will get a love letter from me. It is meant to inspire you, to help you think differently. I do not sell anything in these letters. I do not give away your email address. I do nothing. I am trying to change the world. That is my mission. And I am trying to help inspire and motivate you every single chance I get. So twice a month, you will get something in your inbox from email from me. You can unsubscribe at any time. It's just a short little thing. It's a little story. It's a little inspirational something meant to help you, I don't know, think differently about your day or week. That's all. If you love it, you can sign up and get it weekly, which is $19.99 a year. $19.99 a year, and you get a free course I have called 5 to Thrive, which is 5 minutes a day to thrive in your life, which sells for $19.99 on my website, but you get that for free if you sign up for the love letter for the year. If you just get it twice a month, I call it Love Bites. You're going to be on there if you download this. I think you'll be happy with it. I'm being transparent, letting you know what's going to happen, but that's the only thing that happens. And again, if you unsubscribe, you still get to keep whatever I sent. Okay. So let's talk about emotional eating versus food addiction. And because things can get really muddy here. So emotional eating is super common and not inherently bad. You know, if you listen to that episode or whatnot, you know, we've all reached for a chocolate during a breakup, or I stress eat popcorn during a deadline crisis. You know, like, I get it. I really love popcorn. Right. And I have butter and salt on my popcorn.
If you're anything like me, you're bad at asking for help, like weirdly bad at it. I've been a busy gal for a long time now. Kids, partner, my own business, all the things that make for a full life these days. And my instinct always was to just white knuckle it and do it all myself. But I say it on this show all the time. Ask for help. You don't have to do it all. And meanwhile, there I was doing it all. And I finally changed all that, from my podcast editor to the person who got 10 years of photos off my phone and into albums I actually look at. I found amazing people to help me on Upwork, and I've been using them for the last 8 years. And you don't need a business for any of this, any project, any size, planning an event, sorting out something at home, finally handling the thing on your list you keep avoiding. Upwork lets you find, hire, and pay expert freelancers all in one place. With Business Plus, you can access the top 1% of talent on Upwork, and with AI-powered shortlisting, you'll get matched to the right freelancer in under 6 hours. No endless searching required. Visit Upwork.com right now and post your job for free. That's Upwork.com to connect with top talent ready to help you and your business grow. That's UPWORK.com, Upwork.com.
Thank you very much. Okay. So you know what I mean? Like, I hear you. But food addiction goes beyond that. It's not about the occasional comfort snack. It's about this, again, persistent compulsive behaviors around food that lead to really distress. It leads to dysfunction, you know, so you might find yourself like hiding food or eating in secret or obsessing about what you'll eat next. I admit I do that every day, but okay. Or feeling unable to focus until you eat. You know what I mean? Like, you just can't even. And I don't mean when you're really, really hungry. All of us, it's harder to focus if you're super hungry. I mean, you're not even hungry and you are just obsessed with thinking about food. Okay. Now, I'm Jewish, so I don't know if that's a cultural thing or not, but we talked about food every meal. Like, while we were eating breakfast, we talked about lunch. You know what I mean? And while we were eating lunch, we were talking about dinner. Is this you? I would love a comment on this. But my Gary, which I've shared before, he could care less about food. He is someone who would definitely take a pill every day if you let him to eat. Like, he enjoys it enough, I guess. Like, yeah, you know, he wants to eat what he wants to eat, but he could not care less. We have had the conversation we have over and over is I'll say to him, hey, what do you want? What are you thinking of for dinner at like in the morning? Because I'm thinking I have to buy the groceries. I have to cook something. And he's like, I'm not hungry. I can't think of it. Like he can't go there. I know. I love him anyway. You should love him anyway too. He tries, but this is scary. And you know, on my list of what I wanted in my dream man, being able to plan dinner at 8 a.m. was not on the list. Now, maybe I should have included it, but I did not. Anyway, so there you go. So one way to think of it, and I hope this is helpful. This is how I separate food addiction and emotional eating. All food addicts are emotional eaters, but not all emotional eaters are food addicts. Got it? I know, right? Isn't that helpful? If food is your primary or only coping tool, and you find yourself feeling out of control or emotionally wrecked after eating, it's really worth exploring whether something deeper is going on. Because let's face it, something is. Okay, so I do want to answer this question because a client asked me this about a month ago when I first was, anyway, when I was first thinking of doing this episode. And I mentioned it. And my client said, well, is this just a diet culture thing? You know, is it really like, and the term food addiction, you know, you might be wondering, like, is that just another sneaky way diet culture tries to make us feel ashamed of eating? Like, that's kind of what she was saying. And no, you know, real food addiction isn't about weight. It's not about willpower. In fact, people of all sizes struggle with it, and it's not something you can fix with another restrictive diet, okay, because those usually make it worse. And I have had thin, very thin people who are food addicts. I want to be really clear. Weight is not always, I know we only think of like really obese people sometimes, but it's not. It can go both ways or anywhere along the spectrum. Diet culture, though, thrives on all or nothing thinking, right? You're either good or bad, depending on what you ate. Food addiction recovery is not like that. It's about healing your relationship with food, not punishing yourself. It's about removing shame and understanding that your brain has been wired for survival in an environment that exploits those very instincts. It's such a biological thing going on. I talked about this a little in the emotional eating episode I did, but I'm getting a little, hopefully even clearer on it for you right now. The key difference is that food addiction is about really a loss of control. There's a mental preoccupation. It's not about eating a slice of cake now and then. Someone without food addiction can enjoy a few cookies and move on. Someone with food addiction might eat the entire box, feel physically ill, and still be thinking about getting more. That's the real difference, okay? And that's why, again, I think of myself more, you know, I've been an emotional eater over the years for sure. And again, I think a lot of it's cultural, just how much I talk about food, how much I think about food, how I show food is love to me, right? But as much as I have an addictive personality, I'm not like addictive with, like I said, I can have a few cookies. I can have a few, not those thin mint Girl Scout cookies. Okay. I'm going to make some caveats. Right. So again, I have some trigger foods like other people that are highly palatable, hyper palatable that can get in the way of that. But in general, I'm not eating those. So it's okay. Right. And I have many clients like me where we talk about this, like, oh, I'm emotionally eating, but maybe they're not addicted to food or vice versa. Okay. They have an emotional eating. They really have a food addiction and they're emotionally eating and they're trying to just address it through the emotional part, through the psychological part. And what do I always say, right? Your biology and your psychology are two different things and you have to address both, especially when it comes to any kind of addiction. You have to address the biology. Okay. And so let's talk about that. Let's talk about the five steps to start dealing with any kind of food addiction. Okay. Cause you know me, I'm always, what are you going to do about it? It's very nice, Abby. Now what do I do? Right. So if you see yourself in what I've shared so far, okay, first just take a breath right now with me in through the nose, out through your mouth, nice, gently, slow, take a breath. It's okay. Okay. It's okay. You're not alone and you're not beyond help. Okay. Even if this has been a lifelong thing, even if this has been like, I think of my food issues, if that's the word, as a lifelong thing. Again, since I've been young, my dad was really heavy. You know, there's food issues in my family. There's all kinds of stuff. Okay. And again, like I said, and I talk about food all the time and I think about it all the time. So I get it. Like it can feel, and that's why it's so important to figure out where you land, you know, and that's why you take a breath. Where am I really? Maybe I really am just an emotional eater. I need to look at that. Maybe I do have food addiction. Maybe I need to look at that. You know, how do I come to that? And by the way, I'm not going to talk about, there is 12, you know, I've talked about the 12 steps a lot of Alcoholics Anonymous, Narcotics Anonymous. And there is Overeaters Anonymous. There's a group called OA. There are groups within the 12 steps that deal with food. I'm not going to talk about those. Not a yay or a nay. Okay. Because I'm going to talk about my 5 steps of where to begin. Okay. So number one, here's how I do it with my clients when we're talking about these things. Number one is, you know, you got to ditch the shame narrative. You're not addicted to food because you're weak. Your brain is doing what brains do. It is seeking pleasure and avoiding pain. So beating yourself up just adds more stress, which guess what, can lead to more food cravings, right? So self-compassion is number one. Practicing self-compassion has to be at the top of your list. I did a whole episode on self-compassion. If you bought my Boundaries Made Easy book, there's an entire chapter in there. I've got chapters in there, and I have podcast episodes on self-love and self-love versus self-compassion, you know, which came first, the chicken or the egg, self-esteem, all of them. What's the difference between all of them? Buy the book or do a keyword search on my website. You will find lots of free information on that. Or if you want it all in one place and I kind of hand feed it to you, buy the book. Okay. So I have an entire chapters dedicated to these kinds of things. But I will tell you this now, because I don't want you to always have to go back somewhere to look. If you're practicing self-compassion, it means you're replacing self-critical thoughts like I have no willpower with, you know, I'm doing the best with the tools I have, right? My favorite one, you know, I'm doing my best in a tough environment. And here's why this is so important. The research shows, there's research, people, that self-compassion reduces binge eating and emotional eating behaviors. There's other studies that have found, so I'm linking to a bunch of studies on in all this, but there's a ton of them. Other studies show that self-compassion interventions help regulate stress, which reduces reliance on food for comfort. Okay. So on multiple levels, practicing self-compassion really will not make you eat more. That's what you think. Oh, self-compassion is going to give me all this indulgence. I'm going to be too nice to myself and I'm going to let myself eat whatever I want. It does the opposite. It, so much of this is counterintuitive. I know. So much of this is, you're thinking, no, I can't be too nice to my, yet. No, first of all, you can't be too nice to yourself, too kind to yourself. You can be too nice, not too kind. Self-compassion is about kindness. It's about kindness and compassion really go together. Some empathy for yourself, if you want to put it that way. Okay. So that's number one. You got to address the shame around food. You have to address it. Work on the self-compassion. Number two is to identify your trigger foods. I would say to do that. I'm going to tell you now the best way, and something I make my clients do, is to start keeping a log, not of calories. I know everyone starts tracking don't track your calories. That's not what I'm talking about. Keep a log of emotions and situations. That's what you're keeping a log of. Which foods feel compulsive for you? I just shared mine, those damn Girl Scout Thin Mint cookies and my white cheddar Cheetos, right? These are definitely not things I should have hanging around. But which foods feel compulsive for you? You should know. When do you reach for them? What are you avoiding or numbing? Okay. And there was a study, I think one of the studies I read, there's a lot of studies on this, but one of them was really recent, like 2022 or something. Again, I'll link to it, so go look. But it found that people with food addiction often reported higher emotional reactivity and use food as a coping mechanism for stress. So logging will help you spot the pattern between stress and your food behaviors. And that gives you a chance to choose differently. So that's why I have my clients do this because of the research. I don't have them do it because, oh, well, that's what I thought to do one day. It's no, like, here's what the research shows. So what would help us, you know, link back to that to make this effective? And logging in this way, tracking in this way does it. My online community, the One Love Collective, is getting a tracking log as part of their membership for this episode. If you're listening and you're in the One Love Collective, you're going to get it. But if you're going to get it anyway. But if you'd like the log, but don't want to sign up for my community, I don't know why, but if you don't want to, as always, as I do every week now, you're going to be able to get like a little workbook to go along with this episode that you could buy for $8. So you could just buy it separate. You don't have to join the community. You could just buy it for $8. I will list everything that's going to be in that workbook at the very end. So if you think you're interested, listen away. But no matter what, you can get the free dopamine detox challenge. You can, or it's not a detox, it's a reset. You can get that no matter what. You don't have to pay money or sign up or do anything. Okay. Number three, the third action step is to feed yourself regularly. Restriction and deprivation are major drivers of food addiction. Again, from the effing research. When you don't eat enough or label foods as bad, you increase the likelihood of a binge later. Your body perceives scarcity as a threat and it pushes you towards high calorie foods. I could spend 2 hours just on this right here. Research has shown over and over that regular eating patterns, particularly those that maintain stable blood glucose levels, particularly those that are higher in fiber and protein, are associated with fewer binge eating episodes and better appetite regulation. Okay? Just right there, just telling you. That's how it goes. So I know some people are going to ask, well, what about intermittent fasting? And again, that generally has a schedule. It has a way that you eat, has a rhythm to it. So I'll say this here too. Intuitive eating approaches also emphasize the importance of like kind of consistent nourishment to reduce, you know, your food preoccupation and promote satisfaction. So any of that is a really good thing. Does that make right? Anything like that. But I really, really want you to think about it. I know I have got clients starve themselves all day, or they eat something bad, quote unquote, in the morning, right? They label something as bad. Oh, I had a bagel. It was so bad. And then they're like, I'm not going to eat again till dinner. These are the worst things to do. The worst things to do. I know it's counterintuitive, but what you've been doing hasn't been working, which is why you're still listening. So I need you to get rid of your own good thinking got you here is kind of how we say that in the 12 steps. So let's try to go with the research instead of you playing doctor. I say with love. I say with so much love in my heart. Okay. I'm telling you things that have been proven over and over. Everyone's a little different. Nothing I ever say, no matter how much research has been done on it, is going to apply to 100% of people. We know that. But let's at least start where the preponderance of evidence is. Give it a good try. And when I say good try, I don't mean a day. I don't mean 2 days. I mean over the course of a month or two and see what fits for you and what doesn't. Okay. Number four, step four is to find new sources of dopamine. Again, go back and listen to my dopamine episode, which was a few episodes ago, because you'll learn a lot there. But I want to say this. So your brain still needs pleasure. It just needs healthier, more sustainable sources of pleasure. So you need to start experimenting with movement, with hobbies, with music, with laughter, with connecting with people you love. Those are off the top of my head. Dopamine isn't the enemy. It's about where you source it. And again, I go deep on the dopamine episode. But I will tell you this, physical activity, for instance, has been shown in a preponderance of research, robust amount of research to increase dopamine levels and improve mood regulation, not just improve your mood, improve the regulation of your mood. And it helps reduce dependence on food also. So as a nice little bonus reward. So again, even small acts like spending time in nature, not for me, but for those of you who like nature, practicing gratitude, appreciation can elevate dopamine naturally. But you've got to find other ways to do it. You can't always just take away. You know, when we live in that world where we're just always taking away instead of putting something in its place, right, that's going to really do a lot of the same things so it's not so painful when something else goes, that's always the answer. I say this everywhere. You know, when people have told me that they have friends they have to, quote unquote, get rid of, you know, like they find out, I just did an episode on friendship recently. If you haven't listened to that, go back. I'm making friends as an adult. And I had a lot of people comment in different ways. And they said, yeah, I've realized after I did that, that I did like a friendship audit. I had that as part of it. Said, there's these people that I really have to let go. I don't know how. And I said, you know, the best way to let go of old friends is to find new friends. When you create new relationships, you just naturally have less time for these other friends. It's just easier to say you're busy because you are. You will have less fixation on them. You will think about them less. It is so much easier to say goodbye to something when there's something else already there that's enriching, that's nourishing, that's filling you up. That then the other things kind of, it's almost magic. They just sort of dissipate into the distance. And that is that way here. If you only have food as your whole world and there's nothing else and that's all you think about, it's the only thing that brings you joy and it's the only thing that brings you moments of peace and it's whatever, right? Then of course, what are you going to do? Give up that? That's crazy. So start adding some things that also can take the place. I always think of that image. If anyone ever saw Indiana Jones, I'm sure you all did, the original one. There in the original Indiana Jones, he's, you know, running in the cave, whatever, and he's grabbing some skull or whatever he's grabbing. And he has a bag, I think it's a bag that weighs the exact same. And he pulls the skull at the same time that he puts the bag that's kind of weighing the same, but it's not the skull. It, you know, on the little thing where he grabbed it from. That's kind of what you're doing. You're trying to, I think that didn't work, by the way, in the movie. Now that I realize it, that's probably a bad example. I think the boulder rolled after him anyway, but you know what I mean, okay? Stick with me. Let me have this moment. So, but it's that idea that you're kind of adding things. I would always add before I say goodbye to things. If you really feel like you have a food addiction, I would start putting into place before you even try to stop eating a certain food, before you even start tracking. Well, maybe start tracking if you want. Maybe just start tracking. Before you really go, I gotta like work on this, start to just look, not just, it's not a just, but look for things to add in your life that are nourishing. So don't replace it with drinking. Don't replace it with pot, you know. Look for with spending too much money that you don't have. Look for things that are nourishing and healthy to start to replace things with. To start to, not even replace, don't even worry about replace yet. To just add to your life. Add to your life in other ways. Start there. And then we start to move towards this other. You will find it so much, it'll be so much less painful. It won't be suddenly like happy, easy, but it'll be way less painful. That I can tell you. And number five, and this is a biggie, is that you need to get some support, okay? This one's really non-negotiable to me, whether, I don't care if it's a therapist trained in food and body issues, I don't care if it's a support group, I don't care if it's a coach who gets it, I don't care if you join my One Love Collective online, even though we don't talk about food there, but you're starting to get support, because by the way, we have talked about some food there. But do you know what I'm saying? Like, you start to just surround yourself with some people who can really help you live a nourishing, healthy lifestyle. People who support you, people who have your back, people who will give you great tips or feedback or just listen. That is, and what I find is that there's so much shame attached around food addiction that people don't reach out for help. And, you know, doing this alone, I got to tell you, having people in your corner makes all the difference, all of it, all of it. There's also evidence that mindfulness-based eating interventions can significantly reduce food addiction symptoms, okay? So you could look into that with some mindfulness-based, and or just start working on mindfulness. Don't even start working on food and mindfulness yet. Just, I have the free mindfulness starter kit. If you haven't downloaded it yet, I don't know what you're waiting for. I have so much on mindfulness. Again, chapters in my book, all kinds of episodes on it. Please, mindfulness, mindfulness. Other studies, there's a lot of studies that have found that cognitive behavioral therapy or CBT and group support are particularly effective in reducing compulsive eating behaviors and improving your emotional regulation. So there are, you've got to get some help. Maybe start with a best friend who's on this thing with you, but to do it alone and to sit in your shame alone is so, you're making it so much harder on yourself. And I know it's because you think, oh, I'm just weak. What's my problem with food? Or I'm too ashamed, or this isn't a big deal. Yes, it is a big deal. It's making you miserable. It is a big deal. It's taking up too much of your time and attention. It is a big deal. It's keeping you from enjoying your life in ways that you should be. So yeah, that's a big deal. Healing is possible, but doing it alone, I will say, makes it harder. So you can heal on your own. You can do it, but it's going to make it harder. Okay? All right. So let me wrap up. If food addiction is something you've been quietly wrestling with or loudly wrestling with, you're not alone. You're not crazy. Your brain and body are doing exactly what they were designed, what they were wired to do in what is a very toxic food environment, especially here in the United States. The good news is you can rewire it. You need support, you need compassion, you need science-backed tools, but healing is absolutely possible. And no, you know, you don't have to give up every cookie forever. That's not what I'm asking. But you do have to pay attention to this. You do have to treat it like a real mental health issue that needs addressing, not with shame, not with fear, but with love, with compassion, with openness, with curiosity, right? That's the way to go. Okay. Whew. All right. That is it for today. I think I covered all the good bases. If you want to hear about what the Patreon community is getting, what the One Love Collective is getting, I will lay that all out right now. And if you're interested in maybe getting the workbook that goes along with this particular episode, which again is $8, if you don't want to join the, if you want to join the collective, it's included. But if you don't want to, then, and you just want to get a one-off, then let me tell you all the things that are there. But no matter what, I highly recommend you get the 5-day dopamine reset challenge. I think it's a great place to start to actually take action on this. Okay. To, like I said, to kind of put in the pieces to make this journey just that much easier. All right. I love you and stick around if you want to hear the rest. So if it's just us now, tier one, my inner circle, you are getting journaling prompts. I call it something like get real with your relationship to food. That's where I'm going. And then there is a trigger food and emotion tracker that I have. It's really simple. You can use an app for this too, but you know, I always try to give you something if you don't want to use an app, if you want to do it another way. Tier two, as always, gets everything in tier one. Plus, you know, tier two is my love accelerator. You are getting a worksheet. It's about, you know, boundaries around food and people, a little worksheet to help you with that. And I created some new mantras for food, some new, you know, new things you can be saying to yourself, trying to counteract that shame a little bit. Tier three gets VIP Love Lab, gets everything in one and two. And I have some reflection questions for you, which I think will really help. I have a weekly meal rhythm template because, you know, you need that regular eating kind of thing. So I think there should be a rhythm to your food, and which is why I created that. And then I also created a self-compassion script for food to just help deal with the food shame. You know, that was my idea about it. So all of that, yes, I know there's a lot this time. Anyway, so that is really it now. I hope this episode was helpful, especially if you're dealing with food. And if you are in the One Love and Love Collective, please feel free to talk about food or anything you're dealing with in those rooms, which is really our community chat threads. Love you big. Very happy you were here with me. And we're going to talk real soon.
Thank you for listening to the Relationships Made Easy podcast with wonderful me, Dr. Abby Metcalf. And I've got two quick things to say. Just give me one more minute. First, I love spending this time with you, and I work hard to make sure every single episode is going to help you move from any feelings of frustration or resentment or anxiety to that connected, hopeful confidence. That's always my goal. So if you have any ideas for a future episode or just want to say hi, let me know what the podcast is doing for you. Anything, you can email me at abby@abbymedcalf.com. How simple is that? And the second thing I want to say is if you like the podcast, you're going to go crazy, crazy for my book. My book is really good. I'm really proud of it. You can find it on Amazon or on my website under the shop section on my website at abbymedcalf.com. It's called Be Happily Married, Even If Your Partner Won't Do a Thing. And even if your partner will do a thing, the book will still really help you. So that's it. Thanks again for listening. Talk to you soon.